A long-lost book, an author who disappeared, a filmmaker's obsession. Back in 1972, Mark Moskowitz bought a copy of a new book, The Stones of Summer, the first novel by 25-year-old Dow Mossman. Critics called it a must-read, the book of a generation. But Moskowitz couldn't get into it, and he put it aside. The book never caught on, and the author never wrote again. 25 years later, Mark Moskowitz picked up The Stones of Summer once again, and this time he was hooked. He knew the author's name, but nothing else about him. He turned his quest for Dow Mossman into a documentary film called Stone Reader, which explores the meaning of reading in our lives. You see the original paperback in Moskowitz's film, the pages held together with a rubber band.
When I finally did read it, I just, you know, I actually read it very slowly at one point because I didn't want it to end. You know, that happens with books.
I'd like you to read the opening paragraph of the book that when you did pick it up 25 years later, completely sucked you in.
When August came, thick as a dream of falling timbers, Dawes Williams and his mother would pick Simpson up at his office, and then they would all drive west all evening, the sun before them dying like the insides of a stone melon. Split and watery, having with blood. August was always an endless day, he felt, white as wood, slow as light. Dawes shifted about in his seat, uncomfortable, watching the land slide past. It was late, a steady progression of night. The conversations in the car were like great wood eyes. And driving west over Iowa, the evening was always air vague with towns, blue fences, and crossroads vacant of cars.
What is it in that first paragraph that captivates you so much?
Well, I think what turned me off when I got it was initially the same thing that I loved later was the lyricism and the way that the words are used to sort of draw you in a very impressionistic way. I don't sit and try to make a picture of great wood eyes, but somehow the sensibility of that I like now. I mean, I like the ambition of that. I think back when I got it then, when it was called The Book of My Generation and just it had burned with generational fire, I figured we were going to read, you know, something much more Vonnegut or Brodigan or of its times. You know, it's just a much more romantic kind of book than that.
You get completely hooked and obsessed with this writer, Dow Mossman, and you start making a film. You start interviewing anybody who could help you solve the mystery of where this man is and what happened to him. Nobody knows.
Dow Mossman. I don't think I ever even heard the name.
You mentioned Dow Mossman, whom I'd never heard of.
You ever hear of the book?
Never heard of it.
Do you remember seeing this?
I've never seen it.
Dow Mossman. Did he write something?
We found people in his class at the Iowa Writers' Workshop. We showed them a picture of him from the back jacket. They didn't remember him. They'd never heard of the book even. And I just found that phenomenal that something so extraordinary could just fall through the cracks, even if people of the same year in the same class.
This also, though, becomes more than just a search for this author, Dow Mossman. You become obsessed with authors who've only written one book. And I'd like to play part of the movie where you are interviewing the literary critic Leslie Fiedler about this.
The most spectacular example is Margaret Mitchell, Gone with the Wind. People sometimes forget that she was a one-book writer. Edgar Allan Poe wrote one novel in his life. James T. Farrell, he wrote God knows how many books, but people only read Studs Lonegan. He's a writer who didn't begin as a one-book writer, but ended as a one-book writer.
Why is that so intriguing to you, that sort of cessation of productivity?
I think there's two things. I think the reason it was intriguing to me, for this one book particularly, was when somebody is really creative, what do they do if that gets shut down? I mean, if there's no commercial outlet, if they stop doing it, where does that creativity go? I know my wife, who was a great painter, when she stopped painting, she did gardening, she did cooking, you know, she did drawing, it went to other things. And, you know, where does your imagination go if you shut down those outlets? But I think the reason that one-book writers fascinate people generally is that here you have a person, a man or a woman you've spent hours or days, weeks or months with in their company, the author's voice, and telling you these stories, and then they're gone. They walked into your house, you had a great evening, and they're gone forever. It's a friend you'll never see again. So I think that's part of what haunts people about them.
It's also clear by the end of the movie that this writer, though, Dow Mossman, is vulnerable. He's you do, in the end, find him, and he's rambly. He hasn't written in 25 years. He's got holes in his sweater and stains on his boots, and he lives with his dog in this mess of a house. I wonder how you reacted when you finally did see him.
Well, first off, I never thought I would find him, and the impetus of the film became not so much to do that, but to hear and talk about other things. But no, I found him fantastic, and I think the reason is because he, like me and like many of the people in the film, are readers. And he flipped that side of the creative coin from writing to reading, which sort of saved his life. And I think one of the things I learn in the film, and one of the things you think about afterwards, is what a creative activity reading actually is, as well as writing. And you know, you're putting the pictures together in your mind, and you're doing that. And in some ways, when you're reading a lot, it's filling a lot of creative space in your mind that, you know, do you know what I'm saying there? Mm-hmm. You know, it's just you're creating somewhat when you read. It's not just diversion and escape. You know, you're doing something. Frank Conroy makes that point in the film.
Yeah, I'd like to play that piece. You end the film with Frank Conroy, and he's talking about exactly this, the way you get engaged when you read.
You enter worlds that you couldn't possibly enter in any other way. You feel the pressure of another human soul on the other side of the book. And that makes you feel less alone and less trapped in your body and less isolated. You feel that you are the brother of the author, and the two of you are working together. It's a very profound, moving experience. It's almost spiritual.
These are things, of course, we know as readers, but I had never thought of it or had it articulated so simply as that. And you know, it was really eye-opening, especially coming from Frank, who is one of my favorite writers. And Stop Time, his first book, was one of my favorite books. And Frank is someone who didn't write a second book for a long, long time, 15 or 20 years, you know, and found his way back. And hearing that said by a writer, you know, captured a lot of the feeling that I had and a lot of the things I was looking for in making the film.
I love what he says about reading Dickens.
When I read Dickens, the old man writes, he might just as well be sitting right next to me. That's how close he is. I feel him right there. He's there. He's with me.
That's how books connect people. Think about the friends you made when you were young and the friends you may still have today, you know, 10, 20, 50 years later, that you connected with because of books back then, because of whatever it was, the Hardy Boys, Nancy Drew, you know, just any book that you loved, that other friends you loved, and just you became friends over that because you're imagining similar things. I think books really have that power.
Mark Moskowitz, thanks very much for talking with us.
Okay, thank you.
Mark Moskowitz's documentary film Stone Reader is playing now in New York. Moskowitz says his dream is to get The Stones of Summer back into print.